T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Come on, son.
Grab the yams on the track.
Come on, son. Come on, son. Come on, son. Today's episode of Come On Inside the Podcast is sponsored by HBO Films' new movie, OG, premiering this Saturday at 10 p.m. OG stars Jeffrey Wright as Lewis, who is in the final weeks of a 24-year prison sentence in a maximum security prison. OG takes an intimate and unflinching look at the journey of one man at the precipice of freedom. After nearly a quarter century behind bars, he must confront the impact of his actions and the challenges of re-entering society. Groundbreaking, it was filmed on location at Pendleton Correctional Facility in Indiana, and its cast includes several of the men incarcerated there. The film premiered at the 2018 Tribeca Film Festival, where Wright won Best Actor in a U.S. Narrative Feature Film. Be sure to tune in to OG, streaming now on HBO Now and HBO Go.
Come on, son.
It is Come On, Son, the podcast. Y'all know me. I am Ed Lover. Now, a couple of little weeks ago, first of all, I got to give all due respect to my man Combat Jack. I never forget that. Combat Jack is the overseer of everything I do as far as podcasting is concerned, because he's the one that put me in the game. Now, a few weeks back, I did a podcast. It was about a TV show, and I had a bunch of young ladies that were strippers here, and I got a great amount of feedback from everybody. But one particular woman who's the producer of that show, I told her that I would have her back so we could do a one-on-one podcast, because her story is so incredibly inspirational and interesting. And I have a lot of stuff to talk to her about. Shantae Pages. Here, Shantae!
Hey.
How are you, darling?
I'm good. So happy to be back.
Tell everybody about your show that you have on right now.
Beyond the Pole.
Beyond the Pole.
Is about everything surrounding the life of an exotic dancer.
Yes.
I have 6 exotic dancers. A few don't dance anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Coach Stormy, who I brought in to kind of help them navigate and find their way into their businesses beyond the pole.
And people can find that where?
UMC.TV.
UMC.TV. And congratulations, it's doing well.
Thank you. It's doing extremely well.
You're doing extremely well. Yes. People are talking about it. Word of mouth is very, very positive. And everything is going extremely well. And we touched on a little bit the last podcast, because you had 2 of the young ladies here with me, and people just thoroughly enjoyed them once they opened up and started talking. I got them to start talking.
Right.
And people really enjoyed, you know, a behind the curtain kind of look. Mm-hmm. At what life is truly like for an exotic dancer in this world. But before that, we had talked a little bit about your career. And I was like, well, I got to have you back to do your own podcast.
Right.
So now let's talk about Shantae Page exclusively.
Okay, let's do it.
When did your career start? Where did it start? What was the first thing you was doing in the entertainment business?
It started when I was at Howard University, actually.
Okay, did you go to Howard when Diddy was in Howard?
Diddy left, and he left the year I came.
Okay.
But yeah, but I know him because he would always come back.
And, right, you know, homecomings and all that
Mark
other
Pitts,
stuff.
All of us, Chris Hicks, Ryan
Chris
Glover.
Hicks, Ryan Glover, Mark, all of y'all.
All of us.
Howard alums.
All of us, yep.
What Matt was Milton. That like, life like?
It was amazing. And the fact that we're all still so connected now.
Right, you guys are 18, 19 years old.
You know. Yeah, yeah.
Where are you from originally?
born in New York, raised in the DMV.
Okay. So you were already in there, out there in the DMV area. That is D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, for those of y'all who don't know what the DMV is. Because you'd be surprised at who listens to this show and they will DM me, what the fuck is the DMV?
Right.
D.C., Maryland, Virginia.
Home of the go-go music.
Yeah, home of go-go. So out of all the schools that you could go to when you graduated from high school, why did you decide to go to Howard?
I had to. Like, I loved the area. And, you know, I would always go to the homecomings in high school. I would always go to parties at Howard and the homecomings. And I was like, I got to be here. I had a full scholarship to Bowie College. And I chose to go to Howard and pay.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that? Your parents said what?
They rolled with it. I mean, I took student loans. They helped where they could. And yeah, they rolled with it.
And when you went to Howard, did you pick a major off the bat? What was your major?
No. Business management was my major, but I didn't pick it immediately. I picked it to get out.
What do you mean? Didn't go to college, what do you mean by that?
That was the easiest major that I could get out quick. Because I knew what I wanted to do. And when I saw Diddy's success, I was like, hey, Mom, I don't have to stay in college. Look what Diddy's doing. And she was like, no, you stay in your ass in college.
So you did the whole ride, the whole 4 years?
Yeah. About 4.5. Yep.
So your mom's was like, hell no.
You know, I don't know who Diddy is. You're not following behind him. I don't, you know.
When did you know that you wanted to be in the entertainment business? When did you know? At Howard. What sparked it?
I started managing a group called Quattro.
Okay.
I brought in Terry Ross, who was one of the Noontime partners. Mm-hmm. He wasn't Noontime back then, but I brought him in to manage them with me because he was the money guy.
Right.
And Michael Ealy was in that group.
Michael Ealy, the actor?
Michael Ealy, the actor, was in that group.
Michael Ealy can sing?
Yes, he can.
Really?
Yep.
So we must, in the future, we might be seeing some Broadway or some stuff out of Mike.
He doesn't like to sing, but he can sing. And he hates me to tell the story.
What do you mean he don't like to sing?
He doesn't like to
sing. How is he in a group if he don't like to sing?
Well, he did back then, but now he's like, oh, I'm an actor. You know, don't tell people, you know, I can sing. I'm like, no. He can sing.
No, it's cool to be well-rounded. What is he talking about? Is he tripping?
Mm-hmm.
You better let them vocal pipes go. Who did the group approach you, this group, Quattro, and say, hey, will you manage us, Shantae?
I don't remember how it happened.
And what did you know about managing the group?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nothing. But I got that group to Gene Griffin.
Okay.
That guy.
Yes.
Basic Black. Teddy Riley was in the mix. Like, so that's how I know Aaron and Damian to this day from that.
Right. And Gene Griffin.
Because
GR Productions.
Gene managed my group and them. So it was all one big melting pot.
Okay.
He didn't end up doing anything with the group. But for me, I felt accomplished because Gene was so big in the game back then.
Yeah. You know? Huge.
Yeah.
Because Guy was out of control.
Out of control. They were huge.
They were the biggest
thing
ever.
Chuckie Thompson used to charge me like $100 for a track.
Chuckie Thompson?
Chuckie Thompson did all the records.
6 degrees of separation.
Yes.
Chuckie Thompson.
Yes.
When I lived in West Orange, my first marriage, I lived right there. Chris Lighty, God rest his soul, lived right next door to me.
Yes.
Right next door to Chris was Chuckie Thompson.
Chuckie Thompson. I used to go to his basement. They would record.
Yeah. The amazing producer, Chuckie Thompson,
who could
replay anything. Chuckie Thompson, if y'all don't know who Chuckie Thompson is, look up his Wikipedia because Chuckie Thompson.
Mary J. Blige, Biggie.
Amazing.
Faith.
Amazing. Yeah. And Chuckie Thompson is the kind of producer that if he likes the sound of a certain record, instead of sampling it, he'll replay it. Mm-hmm. And he'll look and find out what instrument they use to play that certain sample, the original, and he'll go find the instrument.
He's a beast.
Yeah, he's a fucking monster.
Mm-hmm.
So all of you guys are in Howard together?
Everybody in that D.C. area. Yep.
Wow.
Chuckie's studio was walking distance from Howard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you're talking about what, 1990?
1992.
Right.
1992, 1991.
Yeah, when one of the greatest eras of music, period, when everything had started, everything is bubbling.
Yep.
Everybody is doing this. So you get out of Howard.
Graduate and move to New York the very next day.
The next day?
The next day.
Had you been to New York a lot?
Yeah. I kept going back and forth. Like, I wanted the music business.
Okay.
I just didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that I had to be in it.
Where did you live when you first moved to New York?
I moved in with Chuck Bone's wife.
Carla
Bone and my friend Ayanna Brown.
Okay.
So they were roommates. I became the third roommate. Used to hang my clothes on like a little, you know, clothes hook.
Right.
And yeah. And that's where I lived. And then Carla eventually moved out. You know, she got her own place. She got with Chuck Bone. And,
right.
You know. And
now what borough were you guys?
Ayanna and I were roommates. We were in West New York, New Jersey, right there with the view.
I used to live in West New York, New Jersey.
Yep.
I raised my kids in Edgewood. Y'all lived in the Galaxy?
We lived in the Galaxy.
Wow. You probably lived in the Galaxy where it wasn't much on River Road at that time.
Nothing on River Road. Us. That was it.
The Galaxy was the only thing there.
Damian lived right in the other building.
Wow.
Yeah. And Tretch lived downstairs.
Tretch was downstairs.
Yeah.
And then
Blockhead Kitten's husband at the time.
Right.
Elliot Blaze or whatever. He had
The Galaxy was the shit. The Galaxy had a movie theater in the building.
Yes.
I was going to move into the Galaxy at one time.
We were living on a budget, but we were balling.
Was that car wash? That car wash wasn't there yet, was it?
Car wash wasn't there, but we had a movie theater. We had the Galaxy kitchen. Like,
yes.
If it snowed, we didn't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, you certainly did.
We just walked through the building and go get something to eat.
Because y'all were up on, the entrance was up on, it's in West New York. Damn, I used to live over there. I can't remember the name of the street.
Weehawken?
Yeah. Right there in Weehawken. Mm-hmm. So y'all was up there.
Main Street. Was it Main Street? Boulevard East.
Boulevard East.
Yep.
That's exactly what
Boulevard
it is.
Boulevard East.
Right there. And then when I went to L.A. and I came back, for a while I lived in a hotel that I went and looked for an apartment, and I moved in Port Imperial.
Okay.
I lived in Port Imperial. Then I left Port Imperial, and I moved up to Edgewater.
Wow.
And then when my wife and I split and we got divorced, she stayed in West Orange in the house, and then she moved to another place, and then she brought the kids closer to me in Edgewater. So that's where my kids went to public school and high school and junior high school, all in Edgewater, New Jersey.
I loved it over there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Until they raised the fucking toll prices. And then I was like, I got to get out of here.
Right.
How much was the toll when you first lived? It was $4.
It was $4.
It was four damn dollars.
And I used to ride the little jitney bus over. Had to get back before they cut it off at night.
Wow.
Or you have to take a cab.
Yeah, that's crazy that you lived in the damn Galaxy.
And Usher used to sleep on my couch all the time.
Why?
Because Usher was recording with Puffy. And Puffy, when he wanted to go do whatever he wanted to go do, he would call us and be like, oh, can y'all watch Usher?
Can you watch Usher?
He was a kid. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm like 22 years old. He was like 14, 15. I don't know.
He's a little boy.
He was a little boy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
In this day and age, you'd be like, no, I can't watch him. But back then, you'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, we ain't doing nothing.
Right.
Drop him off. What did Puff have a cabriolet in?
I don't know what he had back then.
Puff had a cabriolet.
Mark Pitts, him, were all, everybody was, Biggie, like everybody was up in Scarsdale.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, was it Scarsdale?
Wow. Because I remember when I was in Hackensack, Puff lived around the corner from me.
Yeah.
When I was in Hackensack back in the days.
Yeah.
And he had a red cabriolet with a white top.
That might have been the days.
He was not too far from me. In Hackensack, New Jersey. And then a lot of people started moving over there also.
Well, this is when he was in
Scarsdale?
Upper New York.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that Scarsdale?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Almost Mount Vernon and all of that.
Yep,
that's
when he lived there. That's when he was a wild boy.
Yeah.
Shout out to Puff.
Shout out to Puff all day and day, Puff.
And only if you know him. If you know him, can you call him Puff.
Oh, I still call him Puff.
Right.
If you fuck around, I call him Sean sometimes.
Right.
So, boy, I know your mama.
Right.
All right, so stop it.
I love Janice.
So what's the first job that you got? So you're living You're living in the Galaxy in New Jersey. You just moved there. What was the job hunt like for you?
I started waiting tables at a restaurant called Jezebel's. And I know you know that.
Of course I know Jezebel's.
I never waited tables in my life.
That was like the spot.
That was the spot.
This is before Puff had Justin's.
Yes.
Jezebel's was the shit.
Alberta, rest in peace.
Yes.
She saw something in me. She hired me. So I was working there and the coffee shop.
No
waiting
way.
Waiting tables. So my mom was like, you graduated? My mom and dad, you graduated from college, you're waiting table?
Right.
But I was making like $40,000, $50,000 a year at the time waiting tables.
Right.
Like we were making some money. And back then, you know, that was a lot of money.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So I figured, you know, with that, I could go to parties, I could mingle, I could meet, you know, everybody who was anybody was coming to that restaurant.
Yes,
you
yes,
had the Denzel
right.
Washingtons to, you know, the L.A. Reid,
yes,
everybody. The black who's
yes,
who.
Everybody hit Jezebel's at one point or another.
Yes.
Absolutely. It was sometimes you couldn't even get in Jezebel's.
Yeah.
They didn't give a damn who you were.
No.
You wasn't getting in there because that's played Spike Lee. Everybody was in Jezebel's. Absolutely.
Everybody. So that's what I did. I did it for like 2 years.
Uh-huh. Still with your eyes on the prize of the music.
Still with my
business.
Eyes on the prize. Then I started, you know, hosting events and doing parties with the gas station with Chuck Bone.
Wow.
Yes.
Small world.
Small world.
Right.
I just was like, I got to figure out a way to navigate and get in. And I didn't know how, but I was like, I'm going to figure it out. So I got with Jay Norris, who went to Howard too.
Mm-hmm.
We started a company called Net Squared.
Okay.
And we did parties. What was the name? Was it Opera? Where did we do? It was a party. Envy's.
Okay.
Did you ever come to Envy's?
Yes.
We did Envy's. And that was another everybody who was a who's
yes.
who. But I made it so if you knew me, like, it was cool. Like, I would get you in.
Right.
So I had Chris Lighty's, the puppy, everybody coming to the door saying, Shantae Page or what, you know. So
right.
I figured, okay, that's how I'm going to get my name out there.
Right.
So that's what I did.
Oh,
Mike
wow.
Tyson, everybody came.
Yeah, everybody went through there at one point or another. And then when did you get your first official music business job?
That was just by happenstance. I was at lunch one day and an entertainment attorney said to me, you know, Jeff Finster is looking for an assistant. And I was like, yeah, but I'm making too much money waiting tables to take a cut to be an assistant and make $20,000 a year. And I'm making 50. But then, you know, he was just kind of explaining it to me. And he was like, well, if you want to get in, you got to figure it out. And you, you know, get in. Don't stay in assistant zone too long. Navigate and, you know, and
right.
move on. So I thought about it. Went in and met with Jeff. Jeff made it clear he had already made his decision to hire somebody else. But based on the relationship with the attorney, he took the interview with me.
Okay.
And so I'm sitting there like,
what the fuck am I doing here then?
Yeah. So I sit there, I talk to him, and at the end of the interview, he was like, I like you. Like, can you take a typing test? Because I really need you to type. It's like, oh, shit, I don't know how to type. So he was like, can you type? I'm like, yeah. So I take the typing test. I suck.
Right.
And so he was like, I really need somebody that could type. Like, my mind was set to hire somebody else. You sold me, but you can't type. I said, give me 2 days. I'll go take a course in typing. I'll come back, and I'll, you know. And I'll rock it. And that's what I did.
Oh, wow. So you really, really wanted that position.
At that point.
Jeff Finster was at what label?
At Jive.
At Jive Records. And who was on Jive at the time?
Mm.
Who they have?
R. Kelly.
Okay. The infamous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was around the whole time of Aaliyah.
Okay.
Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys, Tribe Called Quest, Akineli.
Some pretty heavy hitters over there at Jive at the time.
Huge. Joe.
Right.
That's how I know Joe.
Mm-hmm.
So
you actually went and took a typing course.
Yep. Came back and rocked it.
Typed
like 70 words a minute. And he was like he was just like baffled. Like, wow.
Right. How do you go from not knowing how to type at all to typing?
Right.
So he hired you.
So he hired me.
Starting salary was what?
I don't even remember, but it was low. I mean, I took a pay cut. But what... Alberta was so amazing. She never let somebody work Saturdays only because she was like, you've got to work, you know, you've got to work the slow days and, you know, the great the right. days that are like really lucrative. But she knew what I was trying to do, so she allowed me to take that job and still work Saturdays with her.
Wow.
For the first year. So I could, you know, so I could keep
supplement
my
income. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. So how many hours were you doing over a job?
That was full time.
Like 8 hours?
Yeah, no, like 12.
12 hours. And then?
Then I would go do parties. Then on Saturdays, I would do Jezebel. Then I had a side hustle with Noontime, and I was, you know, trying to sell their tracks. Yeah.
And you had a side hustle with Noontime?
Yeah.
Who were some of the people you were meeting with to try to sell Noontime tracks? Because they blew up.
Lior Cohen, Kevin Lyles. Like, I was meeting with...
Shout out to Kev. I just saw Kev.
Yeah, that's my guy. So I was meeting with everybody. Like I would call... I didn't have any shame.
Right.
I would, you know, call and make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody at Jive were you trying to sell, or you was just
kept
that
Finster
separate?
At the time was like was the big dog at the time, and
right.
I was just—you would have thought it was crack. I kept trying to push their track, and then finally, Dave was like, "You know what? She's got some really hot cats. Like,
right.
we need to do something with them."
Uh-huh.
So eventually, it kind of caught on.
Wow! Wow! How long did you stay an assistant to Jeff Finster? Why did you move on? I know you moved on.
I moved on. I don't feel good about this, but he asked me to commit to a year.
Uh-huh.
But when the opportunity arose from Brett Wright, who was going over to Volcano Records,
mm-hmm.
At the time, to start a new label, Brett wanted to bring me in, so I quit.
Oh, wow.
8 months in.
8 months in, you quit, and you go with Brett over to Volcano. Now, who was Volcano? Was a subsidiary or something?
It was a subsidiary.
Always, for those of y'all who don't know, maybe listening to this podcast, there's a lot of subsidiaries.
Yes.
It's like a parent company, and then you'll hear about this label that they gave somebody a label, and that label's a subsidiary. This label was a subsidiary of the major label. Volcano was under who?
Volcano was under, I'm not sure. I'm having a brain freeze. But yeah, they were a subsidiary. Kevin Zinger, I think his name was at the time, was he kind of spearheaded it.
Uh-huh.
And
Brett brought you over.
Brett brought me over.
As what? His assistant? Because you weren't trying to be no assistant anymore,
right? I made
right?
that very clear. So
right.
I was kind of the marketing and the marketing arm, but I was also his assistant. So I had two titles.
Right.
But the assistant title wasn't what we called me, you know?
Okay.
So, he would say she's my, you know, marketing person. But,
right.
you know, if I had to answer his phone, I had to answer his phone.
Oh, okay. And who did you guys have over there?
Well, Akinelli actually came over there. Akinelli came, they did a deal with Gerald Levert. And that was called Global Soul.
Okay.
So they had
for his own label?
For his own label.
Were the Rude Boys under that umbrella?
I don't think so. He had the OJs under that umbrella.
He had
a few other artists. That's how I met Leonard Brooks.
Okay.
Well, actually, I met Leonard Brooks before that.
Shout out to Leonard
really
Brooks.
Yes.
My man.
Yes.
I seen Len in a minute. Troy from 5001 Flavors introduced me to Leonard.
Yep. I know Troy.
I haven't seen Leonard in a long time. Shout out to Five, man.
Yep.
Wow.
It's like a small
yeah,
world.
Definitely 6 degrees of separation.
So Leonard had an office in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
We were trying to make things happen there. And then all of a sudden, Kevin had a different mindset. He got with Dallas Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And Dallas was starting, I think, Rowdy. Was it Rowdy Records?
Rowdy, yeah.
He had a few artists. Dallas was popping and hot at the time.
That
so
was on fire.
Dallas wanted to bring him his own team.
Okay.
So we walk in one day and we all have pink slips.
No way.
Yeah. We walk in one day and we all have pink slips. And I was so offended by it because I was like, they didn't even bother to meet me or, you know, to see my worth or talk to me or... And it was him and Dave Gates in the office. And I walked in and said, and I love Dave Gates, by the way.
Now. Yeah, shout out to Dave.
But I walked in the office and I was like, you know, you didn't take the time to get to talk to me and see, you know, my worth or anything about me. And I was like, but I promise you, you're going to see me again. Dallas was like, what? And every time he sees me, like, we just laugh. because, yeah, that's how I felt. I was pissed at the time.
Yeah.
But then somebody said to me,
How do you say that without using a few expletives?
I probably did.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't nice. It really wasn't
nice. I know me. I'd have walked in there and said, really? This is
really,
y'all going to do
it?
You don't meet with me?
Fuck you. Yeah.
Yeah, some fuck you shit.
Yeah.
You know what? Fuck both of y'all.
Yeah.
Y'all would see me again.
Yeah. That's basically what I said. But somebody was like, you're never nothing in the music business until you get fired. So I was like, okay, I'm on my way up now.
Right.
That's how I looked at it.
So where do you go after that?
I was jobless.
For how long?
It started to hurt, I want to say, for about a good year. So I started doing all these little side hustles, and I did a charity golf tournament in the Bahamas. Somebody hired me to do that. You know, I'll talk my way into anything.
Right.
I never did that in my life. But I got all of the B-listers at the time, who are A-listers now,
right,
out to the Bahamas. The Chris Spencers, the Damon Wayans, who else? I even got Jermaine Jackson out there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jermaine Jackson ain't never been on B-list.
I don't
give a damn.
They were all there. I was like,
he's royalty.
Yeah.
That's royalty.
I don't know how I did this. It was myself and Lorna Lightfoot, who was one of my partners in NetSquared with Jay Norris.
Right.
And so we did that. So I just did little, you know, side hustles to keep the bills paid. But it was getting tight. So there was a music convention in Nevada. I forgot what it's called.
Mm.
You probably remember, but they would always do it in Nevada, because then all the radio people would go to all the bunny ranches and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was in Nevada, and Tina Davis, shout out to Tina Davis.
Shout out Tina Davis.
She's like, you should come. And I was like, you know, my money's tight right now. I can't go to no, you know, music convention. And she was like, no, well, you could stay with me. You know, she was at, where was she at? What was the big rap label back then?
Def Jam?
She was at Def Jam.
Right.
So Def Jam was covering her room. So she was like, you could stay in my room. You don't have to cover it. Just get out there.
Right.
So I did.
Okay.
And so I'm playing the slot machine, and then somebody taps me on my back, and it's Kedar Massenburg.
Oh, wow.
And Kedar is like, you know, I've been watching you for a minute, and I've been seeing you move and your hustle and everything you're doing. He's like, I want you to come work with me. But you got to give up everything you're doing. You can only work with me at Kedar Entertainment. I don't want to hear about you doing parties and this and that and golf tournaments. I don't want to hear about none of that.
Right. And what are your thoughts?
I said, okay, if the salary's right, I'll do it.
Right.
So that's what happened. And he told me, write it down on a napkin what I wanted. And I did.
Right there while you're at the slot machine?
Yeah. Right there. I was like, oh, I hit the jackpot.
Wow.
So I wrote it down. And he was like, get with Kojo, who was his GM at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, shout out to Kojo.
Yeah, and he was like, y'all, you know, we'll work it out.
Just like that.
Just like that.
You wrote down what you needed to survive.
Right.
Plus some.
Yeah, a little bit more on top. I kind of undercut myself. But, you know, you do that. You don't know any better.
Yeah, and you're looking at that paper. You say here. He looks at it. Say, okay, get to Kojo. Mm-hmm. And you're good.
Yeah,
and
when we get back from
right, did
from
you think
Nevada,
he was bullshitting? Because you know people in this business bullshit.
I knew Kedar wasn't, because Kedar was one of those like, you know, he's abrasive.
Yes,
you know, so I knew he meant business.
Right,
and he would come to all the parties I did. You know, so I did know him from that world.
And brought you in over to Motown.
Brought me over to Kedar Entertainment.
Kedar Entertainment
just started. Kedar Entertainment.
Oh wow!
Just started it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Under what capacity over at Kedar?
I was director of publishing and production. So I handled, because most of the artists like Erica and Chico, all of those artists.
They were all signed to Kedar Entertainment.
Kedar Entertainment and Kedar, he signed them publishing deals too.
Okay.
So Gerald Isaac, I was like shopping his tracks.
Uh-huh.
You know, the same thing I was doing for Noontime before I was doing for Kedar.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So who was at Kedar when you got over there?
Me, him, and Kojo.
That's
it. Him, Kojo, and Lynn Scott started shortly, I think, after
What artist?
Sincere Thompson.
Shout out to my man, Sincere Thompson.
Sincere Thompson.
The man who took me to Cognac, France, and made me a Martel ambassador. Shout out to...
That's the dude right there.
That is my man, 50 grand for life.
Yep.
Love him.
And Frank Fraley. Okay. Frank Fraley was there.
Yes. And what artists did y'all have signed? Because you mentioned Erykah Badu.
Chico DeBarge.
Chico DeBarge.
We had an artist named Granique.
Okay.
She was from the DMV area. And Profile.
Okay.
Profile was a four-guy group. And
I remember that group.
Yeah. They had the song Liar.
Yeah.
That blew up.
Yeah.
So that was the first group I A&R'd.
Profile.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I'm sorry, Shantae, you know I know, but there may be somebody listening that does not know. What does an A&R do?
So an A&R is short for artist and repertoire.
Okay.
And you basically, you have the power to sign the artist, you pick the songs, you pick this if it needs a songwriter, producer. If you're finding a song that's already created, it could be any of those things, but we would also get the songs mixed, mastered,
right,
everything to get to without the artwork, everything that the musically we would handle.
So do you go back to Noontime immediately for some tracks for Profile?
Absolutely. That's what I did. Noontime was on every single album.
Every single album.
Yep. Noontime producers. Brian Cox, Jazzy Faye, J-Dub.
You're talking about some heavy hitting dudes right there.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Dent. Anthony Dent. Yep.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. I showed love.
Yeah.
That's how I get down.
So how long did you stay over with Kedar? Did you transition when he went to Motown?
I did.
Okay.
Yep. I transitioned with him. And once we became Motown, I don't know, I stayed, I think, for about 4 years, maybe.
What happened with Motown and Kedar Massenburg?
I think Kedar was, he lost his power when they put him in that position in Motown. Like, he could do it. When we were Kedar Entertainment, he'd be like, fuck you, I'm not turning it in, and it's going to come out when it comes out. And
right.
They had to go by his rules. But once he became the president of Motown, that changed. We had to have structure. We had to have, every 3 months, something had to come out. We were just throwing stuff out, seeing what sticks.
Right.
So it made it more difficult.
And then when those things that you're throwing out don't produce the results, it's your fault.
Right.
But they need to have something come out.
They need to have something.
Every 3 months.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of like to the detriment of the artist?
Yeah.
Because the artists come to you and they believe in you. And they believe that you're going to do
you
right
have
by them.
Their life in your hands.
Right.
Yes.
And then 3 months later, you really know when this project is not ready, but you have to because of your deadlines with the parent company.
Right.
Put something out. So you just throw them out there and then they fail.
Well, what happens, we could take a while to record the album, but once we were promoting a single.
Right.
Or promoting anything that had to do with that album, you got in that 3 month window. So it was like, okay, you're promoting this single. We got to put this album out, within 3 months.
Why?
That's just the way it worked.
Why can't you just let it bubble a little more until it takes off and do what it really supposed to do and then put the album out?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they do that now,
Right.
But they didn't then. So it was a tough situation. And Kedar's the type of guy, he has a heart. He cares. He really cares about the artist.
About his artist. He didn't.
Yeah,
he wouldn't sign nobody that he didn't.
Right.
Wasn't personally invested in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he, I think he took it hard.
Right.
A lot of that hard.
Uh huh. And when did
I think they didn't set him up to win.
Yeah. Well, that's the way of the world. Sometimes. Yeah. When did it end for you guys over there? Did you leave?
I left a year before he did.
Okay. Why did you decide to leave?
I saw how they were sabotaging a lot of our records.
Okay.
I saw that.
Who's the parent company to Motown at the
Universal.
Time? Universal. Okay.
I saw that we weren't set up to win.
Uh-huh.
And I felt.
Who else, excuse me, who else before you finish that, who else was under that Universal umbrella at the time? What other subsidiaries were they? Was Def Jam there at the time?
No, Def Jam wasn't there at the time.
Okay.
It was Charles Suit and Steve Rifkin both had something under that umbrella at the time. We were officially Universal Motown.
Right.
But it still wasn't like, it was still us against them. It was weird.
Yeah, you're competing with yourself.
Right.
Like everything that comes out, it's a hard competition for everybody because you putting a record out, Charles Suiten and Steve Rifkin's getting the record out. Everybody's trying to go for that same chart position or that same hit record at the same time.
Right. Instead of us figuring out, okay, well, here we're going to put this one and then we're going to work collectively as a team. It just didn't work.
It was all separate companies.
Yeah.
So Universal was basically sitting there throwing everything out there. And if something sticks and it blows up, then we make our money back from all the money we spent on this other shit.
Right.
And then fuck this other shit.
And sometimes when they threw it out there, it would take off. You know, it would do that.
What is the record that you guys had that Universal threw out there and it took off?
Well, Kim took off. I signed Kim.
You signed Kim?
I signed Kim.
My wife loves Kim.
Yeah. But see, Kim already had a base. He already had a foundation. He already was selling records out his trunk.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, me signing him, it just put a machine behind him. So that immediately took off.
Yeah. Yeah. Kim is a really great artist, too.
He is.
He's fantastic.
Dope. And he had a great backstory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think people really felt him and he resonated with people. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Great. So you leave a year before and voluntarily walked out the door?
Yes.
To do what?
To, in my mind, I was like, I'm going to do TV and film.
Okay.
And I thought it would be a lot easier to get in, you know.
Nobody said, Shantae, your services are not wanted here anymore.
No, nobody said
You
that.
Just said, I'm done.
I just said, I'm done.
Did you stay in New York? You was done? You going to stay in New York and do television and film? Or you going to L.A.?
I was going to stay in New York and do it. Because there were a lot of, you know, there was a lot of productions happening
in
New York. So that was the plan. I had a cushion. I had a nice little cushion. And I said, okay, I'm going to give myself a year to figure this out.
Uh-huh.
And that was probably not a smart decision.
Why not?
Because it was tough. I didn't realize, you know, that the TV and film the production, they didn't really respect music. They looked at us like, you know, we were just handed stuff and, you know, we're getting paid a lot of money and we were lazy kind of people. And they really, coming in, they were like, we don't care if you were a senior vice president, you know, you could be a PA.
Really?
It was that type of thing. So I did. I did PA.
You PA'd for who?
I PA'd for various productions because I was like, you know, I'm going to humble myself and I'll start from the bottom. You know, I'll do that. And when people would see me, they would think, oh, you're over here. You're running stuff over here. And they had no idea I was even a PA.
Right. You're like, no, I'm a PA over here.
Right, I'm a PA. Yep.
Right. I'm basically go get the coffee, go get this, go get that, make sure this person get there,
when you
grab
talk
that,
about
do this, do
humble,
that. Yeah.
That's humble.
Who hired you as a PA first?
It was a couple of
Were you
of
working
videos.
On videos and stuff?
Yeah, it was a couple of video shoots. I was a PA. I remember Rick Ross was on one and Trey Songz and, you know, and I knew all the artists. So they were just like, yo, Shantae.
Right.
But had no clue.
Oh, wow.
So I'm trying to hide that I'm a PA.
Right. Yeah. So you go from a senior vice president.
Yeah.
That you walked away from the label.
Yep.
You know, even did you ever have any doubts about that?
I did.
Reservations like, damn, maybe if I should have stayed over there. And even if Kedar left, maybe they'd have kept me within the Universal system.
Yeah, I did. I did have that. But then Kedar reassured me and was like, no. Like, I was his right hand.
Right.
He was like, they would have got rid of you. You know?
Right.
If they didn't keep me, they wouldn't have kept you.
Right, because they blow out the whole...
Yeah, they blow out everybody. So
everybody
got that kind of made me feel better. Like, okay, I wasn't, you know...
And how long were you PAing? If that's the term.
Yeah.
Might have made that up, PAing.
I probably did about a good 5 or 6 shoots and various projects, and then I was like, I'm not doing this shit no more. So I had to figure it out, and I said, okay, I'm gonna start producing my own content.
Right.
And give proof of concept so that people will say, oh, you can produce on this side.
Right.
You know, you're not just a music producer. So that's what I did. And
what's the first thing you did?
It was called Style Aficionados. It was two stylists, two gay stylists, Dalimu and Terrell.
Okay.
The thing about it is Terrell was styling all the hip hop artists. I don't even know if the hip hop artist knew whether he was gay or not. I guess it didn't matter because he was so dope.
Right.
To them. But, I just saw compelling personalities and I fell in love with them. So I said, I want to tell their story.
Right.
And so that's what I did. I shot webisodes, took it to Ryan Glover, who was at the time at Turner, Peachtree TV.
Okay.
And sold it to them to air on. They were doing a new like website or whatever, and doing webisodes back then on their site. So yeah, so they bought it. So I was able to monetize it.
Oh wow!
And then a guy named
Drano, put your own money up for it?
Yeah, I did.
Oh wow!
And then a guy named Drano, who is a friend of mine from the West Coast, he got the same webisodes to James DeBose. And James had Keisha Cole's show, he was running BET. He had all the shows on BET and he loved it. So he started hiring me for his shows.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I'm in now.
Yeah, so now you got your foot in the door.
Now I got my foot in the door. But they don't automatically make you a producer. So I was doing, I was doing the logging. I just was getting in where I fit in.
Right.
Yeah.
Doing everything at the same time.
Yep.
Just running around doing everything. And when did you run across Mr. Roger Bob?
A friend of mine, Erica Monroe Kennerly, because she's married. She knew Roger. She knew Roger very well, and she just kept telling Roger about me. And she was like, "She's there. She's working with James." And by now, I'm like story producer.
Right.
And, I'm really doing some things. So she kept trying to introduce us. I met Roger, and then he was like, well, do you want to do post-production? And I didn't really know anything about post-production. But I was like, I know post for, is editing and, but I didn't know online, offline. I didn't know any of that. But I'm like, yeah, I love posts.
Is this another typing story out of you?
Yeah. I'm like, I love posts. And he's like, well, we got a supervising post producer. Post production supervising job at Talapera Studios. That's what we're looking for.
Right.
And I said, I'll do it. And he was like, okay, I got to set up an interview and whatever. So I wasn't living here. I was still living in New York. I just used to come back and forth all the time.
Right.
And so I came to Atlanta for the interview. I got the job and I didn't go back home for like maybe a month to get my clothes. So I had to like figure it out.
Right. So what exactly did that title entail? What is your job exactly?
Yeah. So it was over all of the TV projects he had. So I basically managed all of the editors. There were about 8 editors, and made sure they had everything they needed, to edit the House of Pain and Meet Brown.
Right.
And I would, I had to deliver all the shows to Turner. So I had to follow it through the whole process, through the editing process, through the approval process, through the sound design mixing process, through the color process, all of that. I had to keep a schedule of everything. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
You didn't know at all?
No.
Could they tell? Or did
I'm sure they could, but I was like, I'm going to figure it out.
Right. You was faking it till you make it, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to figure it out.
Wow.
I delivered 222 episodes.
Wow. With no experience.
Wow. I knew enough from sitting with editors on projects that I worked on. Mm-hmm. I knew about the editing process, but I didn't know about sound design and color.
Did you have to go to every edit session?
Yeah, well, we were all together in the same, you know, like area. It was just a post area.
Right.
And so, yeah, I oversaw everything.
So they
But now I'm a post rat. I love it.
So how are you following each and every episode? You got the script in front of you, you know?
Yeah, we have the script. We have the final script. We get copies of every single, any change they make in the script,
right.
Anything. And Tyler would always have to come and approve everything. Roger would always have to come approve everything.
So they look at every single episode before it goes out.
Yep.
And say, okay, good.
Right.
Or no.
Or no.
What happens if it's a or no?
They'll make the changes they want, and then they have to come back and approve that.
So they go back and refilm stuff. Changes.
Not refilm, but just, you know, make changes in editing. But
right.
Sometimes we would, you know, do an ADR, which is
right.
Like, you know, add audio if it needed, or mm-hmm. we would, or you might reshoot a particular scene. And we had strict deadlines. So I would put those schedules together. So I'm dealing with Turner. I'm dealing with Turner execs.
Right.
Telling them when I can deliver, you know, trying to figure out when I can deliver. And yeah, all of
and
that.
And you're dealing with Tyler Perry.
And I'm dealing with Tyler Perry.
And you're
Perry.
Dealing with Roger Bob. And Tyler Perry, from what I hear, I met him once, but I've never had an opportunity to sit down and talk to him. That's very demanding with the things that he wants and what he needs.
He is
a perfectionist.
But it was an awesome experience because it was like boot camp to me.
Right.
And it was invaluable. Like the reason why I can produce the way I produce is because of being there.
Right.
Yeah.
And you working your ass off over there.
Yes. I didn't have a light. It was
12, 14, 16-hour days?
Yep.
Jeez.
Yep.
Like, you got to really want this shit to do
you
it.
You got to want it. And so Tyler was the type of guy that he would just wake up one day and say, okay, I want to shoot in the middle of delivering 6 episodes a week, which is unheard of.
6 episodes a week?
Well, we would deliver 3 of House of Pain and 3 of Meet the Barons.
Okay.
So that's 6.
Right.
And I was overseeing both shows.
Right.
He would say, okay, I want to do a talk show from my movie. You know, Why Did I Get Married? I want to do a talk show, a late night talk show. So let's do that too. So he would just throw that in the mix. One day I said, well, I want to produce it. And everybody came to me like, are you fucking crazy? Why would you do that? Like, you have a solid job. Why would you
right.
put yourself in the fire? Because if you write that show, if you write the script for that and it goes to hell in a handbasket, you're going to get fired.
Right.
And I was like, I got to take the chance.
Wow.
So I ended up producing like 4 talk shows that he decided to do.
Mm-hmm. And what were those shows?
It was called The Tyler Perry Show.
Okay.
It aired on Turner at night.
Uh-huh.
It, just a marketing tool for his movies.
Okay.
Like Janet Jackson, Jill Scott, they all like made appearances, but I wrote the script. So I had to deal with Tyler one-on-one.
What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, I don't have anything bad to say about him.
Right.
Yeah,
But he's very particular about what he wants.
Oh, very, like, yeah, like... I had to get with it. Like, he would say, okay, yeah, I want to change this. I want to change that. And then he'd be like, okay, you ready? Let's go shoot. And I'm like, oh, shit. Wait, I got to make changes. Like, I mean, it was very stressful.
Wow.
But I did it.
But it got you on your A game.
Got me on my A game.
100% on your A game.
Yep.
Wow. And if you're not ready for that, you're
not ready, you're not ready.
Yeah, you better
so
be
you
ready.
So you got to stay ready.
Yeah.
And so I have producer credits for that, and then I ended up also doing some his DVD, all the editorial for that, for his plays.
Right.
So not only am I working on the TV shows, now I'm working on the plays, talk show, everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your plate had to be crazy.
Yeah.
So you're working weekends, holidays, everything.
Nonstop.
It's just nonstop. You just go home, go to bed, get up, go to work.
Yep.
Jeez.
Boot camp. Two and a half years I did that.
2.5 years. And then why did you move on?
He was starting a new show. I don't remember. It's one of the shows that ended up going to OWN.
Uh-huh.
And I said to Ozzy and Will, Will LaRue, shout out to them. I was like, it's not fair for me to start a whole new show. Because, you know, he doesn't just do 10 episodes. Like, he'll do 60.
Right.
So I was like, it's not, I don't want to tell, you know, commit to you for that when I know my heart's not in it to keep working like this. You know?
Right.
I want to work on some projects that I want to work on.
Okay.
So they understood. And the thing about post supervisors, it's not easy to find somebody who understands or, you know, who can really do that.
Right.
So, you know, I gave him my notice. And at the time, Roger had just left, too. Mm-hmm. So the timing of it, they were kind of like, okay, is it because Roger? But, you know, I was like, I'll help transition the next person, you know, into my position, but it's time to go.
Right.
So that's what I did.
You step out on faith a lot, don't you?
I do.
God got his arms all over you, Shante Page. God got his arms all over you. Mm-hmm. So how you did? Was it immediately your plan to get back with Roger, or no? Or you just ready to go do your own thing?
Yeah, I plan on doing some projects with Roger. Roger's my guy. I love him.
Shout out to Roger Bob.
Yeah, shout out to Roger. And it just happened that Keith Klinkscale, who was at ESPN at the time.
And Vibe before that.
And Vibe before
that. Shout out to Keith.
That's my guy, too. So he calls me and says, hey, I have this, it's called The Battle.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a season, and, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't want to go with who, you know, was producing it before. Just so happens it was the person that fired me a long time ago. I'm not going to say his name.
Wow.
And he said, so I'd like you to, you know, take over. I need you to get a producing partner. So I went to Roger.
Right.
And that's what we did.
Oh, wow.
So that was the first project out the gate. Both of us leaving Tyler, that's what we did. And I was executive producer of it. He was executive producer.
Right.
So it was a good look.
Yeah, excellent look.
And Keith threatened me with death and was like, you can't go over budget. Like, not a penny. And we didn't.
You didn't?
And we didn't. No.
You kept it under budget, huh?
Yep, we did.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. That's an amazing thing. So are you still working with Roger?
Well, I do Ricky Smiley For Real with Roger.
Yes, with Roger Bob.
We 5 seasons in.
Yeah, and I had a pleasure of doing that show with you guys.
Yes.
We had a great
And I brought
time.
You in on that.
Yes, you
like,
did.
I saw you. I was like, oh, we got to have Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. So y'all did 5 seasons so far?
5 seasons so far. We don't know yet. We haven't heard yet if there's going to be another season or mm-hmm. if that was that. But the ratings were really good. People love it.
Yeah.
They love
I get recognized for being on it.
Yeah.
People, I saw you on Ricky Smiley For Real, man. That was fun. That was funny as hell when you was on there with your wife and y'all was doing this, that, and the third. I was like, thank you. Oh, man, I remember when y'all did the thing and Gary choked and y'all put it on. I was cracking up.
Yes.
People just really, really enjoy the show.
They love the show.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they
so,
do.
Yeah, so I did that with him. You never know. You probably do some other stuff with him, too.
Yeah.
I think he's getting a chance now to see me in a different light because I'm doing my own show running and
mm-hmm.
and running everything through my production company. So he knows, he's like, oh, okay, she can really handle everything.
Right. And it's a workload.
It's
not easy.
Beyond. There's no stress like that.
It's so.
That stress is like
What's the hardest part? Is the hardest part getting the budget? What's the hardest part?
Well, you're handling the budget. You're trying to stay under budget. You're paying people. You're putting out fires. You're hiring all the crew.
Wow.
You're handling, you know, the filming, everything that
and you're
goes
dependent,
wrong.
And you're depending on people to be professional.
And you're depending on people to be professional and to do what they're supposed to do. And you're handling the post side. You're handling, I mean,
right.
everything. But I would not be ready for that had I not had the experience with Tyler.
Right.
I just wouldn't.
Yeah. Because when you're doing your own thing and you got the budget and you're depending on people to be professional, people don't understand that time is money.
Right.
So, like, when we were talking about the show that you currently have and LaBrie was here.
Right.
And LaBrie was like, well, Shante didn't like me at first because I used to be late. And I'm like, you late? You fucking up money.
Yeah, you fucking up the money. And it wasn't I don't like her. I love her. But
right.
I was like, you're fucking up my money. So what
right.
I started doing with her, I just started shooting the scenes without her. And I was like, because if
she got
you,
it
you're
then,
not
right?
going to be here. Yeah. So she would come strolling in. And then a couple scenes, it was like the tail end. She didn't even know what the heck was going on. And I naturally followed that. And I'm like, now you got to explain that in your interview. Like, it's just whack. But I'm not going to hold up a whole entire crew because you had to get your makeup, hair, and whatever ready. Right. She gets it now.
When you should have had that ready already on the days when you know that you're shooting.
Right.
You should do that 2-3 hours ahead of time.
Yeah.
Before you know you have to be somewhere. Let me give y'all a classic example of how money can get fucked up and what Shante as a producer and line producer and people that handle money will go through. We did a movie that was released in 1993 called Who's the Man?
Oh,
and then Dr. Dre and I played barbers that became police officers. We are horrible barbers. We became cops. So we have all of these celebrities in it. We do a scene where Nick, who is the proprietor of our barbershop, gets blown up in the barbershop and he dies. And then Dre and I walk by. They blow out the whole front of the barbershop. And then the next scene is the funeral scene. And we had slated Mary J. Blige to sing Amazing Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Mary was coming.
Mm-hmm.
6:30 in the morning, all the trucks show up at the church. Everybody's ready. 8 o'clock call time, no Mary. 9 o'clock, no Mary. 10 o'clock, no Mary. She never showed up. I mean, her people are there. They're calling. They're trying to figure out where she is. She never showed up. An entire day. Shoot, went down the fucking drain. And this is not a big budget movie.
Right.
We only had $3 million to do the movie. But that shit cost a lot
of
fucking money.
That's down the toilet, because you still have to pay those people.
And then we got to reshoot the scene with Bow-Legged Lou singing. Thank God Bow-Legged Lou from Full Force was part of the cast. And we just rewrote it and said, well, let him, his character, 40, sing Amazing Grace.
Right.
Thank God that was even possible, that we didn't have to go out and try to find somebody else. So now you understand when somebody is slated to do something and film something and you're not on time and the crew is there, the crew is ready, because the crew got to get paid. They don't give a fuck.
Right.
And these are Teamsters.
Yeah.
You have to pay them. There's a dude that sits in the truck.
Yeah.
If you got like the trucks where the dressing rooms are, there's a truck attached to it, and then there's all these dressing rooms. There's a guy whose job it is, as a union member, to sit in that truck that pulls all the other to the dressing room. And he gets paid to stay there all day.
They don't play.
All he do is get out, he smokes cigarettes. When it's lunchtime, he goes eat lunch, and then he comes back and sits in the front seat of the fucking truck for 14, 15, 16 hours and getting paid out of his ass. So when you get an opportunity to do television or film, Shante, when I did Ricky Smiley For Real with y'all, was I ever late?
Nope.
No.
Never.
Never.
And always professional, and you always were like ready to go.
Whatever y'all need to do. You know why? Because first of all, it's an honor and a privilege for you to be able to even work in this business.
Right.
It's not a birthright. It's not something that you know that you're just, oh, well, I'm a superstar. I don't care. I hear so many horror stories about people dealing with people. And it's been so many stories that I've been on so many sets, and so many PAs and assistant directors and stuff like that have told me stories about some people that have been absolutely horrible to work with. I am shocked and amazed that they're doing a Bad Boys 3 right now. Because from what people told me, Bad Boy 2, Martin was a fucking pain in the fucking ass. He had them build a fence around his trailer, a fence around his trailer, and in order to talk to him, this is what a PA told me when I was doing a commercial with Reverend Run. You would have to talk to his guy for his guy to get on a golf cart to go and tell Martin that you were ready for him on the set.
Well, let me say something in his defense on that. I don't know about the building the thing around the trailer, but show running, I have an understanding of like why, even when we heard about Steve Harvey and he said people just can't come to him and talk to him.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah. Because everybody just comes at you.
Yes.
You're running a show.
Yes.
And somebody will come to you and say, hey, you know, where do I get this? Or what location are we going to? Or where's my paycheck? Or, okay, we have an accountant, there's a supervisor,
that's
producer,
right.
There's all
I
these
understand.
People. Why the hell would you come to me the EP showrunner asking me these questions, but they do that.
Yeah.
So you gotta set surprised. Those boundaries.
What you call is here, and they want to say what's up. Yeah, I mean, out of nowhere, when you're doing something, when you're working, whatchamacallit is out there and they want to say what's up. Now, Will didn't have a fence around his shit, and Will signed every autograph and took every picture. And the PA could knock on Will's door and say, Mr. Smith, we're ready for you, and he would come.
But that see, shit what Martin see, was see, doing, he was gassed up. No, but he probably had that temperament. Like, everybody doesn't have the temperament to be able to.
But and in the case of Steve Harvey, I just thought that it shouldn't have been a memo. Steve should have just said something to people. He'd gather everybody and say, listen, this is how we're going to operate from moving forward. Because that dude gets up, does a morning show, then he got to go do his own talk show.
His hustle is
out of control.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get yourself mentally prepared to do the show, you don't have time to talk to every damn body that comes in. And people shouldn't.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be able to get to him like that. They shouldn't. You should chill out. Nobody should be able to. When he's walking from his dressing room to the set to do his show, nobody should be able to run up to him.
Right.
Nobody. And tell him nothing. Everything should be allocated and taken care of. I understand that part, but some people do get a little gassed up.
Yeah. Yes. That's true.
They do. And they make your job very fucking difficult with what you're trying to do as a producer and as whatever in whatever capacity you're in.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Make it, and they don't, and they forget that it's a blessing to be even in that position. I have never been in a position where I'm making $20 million a film or $10 or $10 million
or
$5 million. Not yet.
Right.
If I ever got in that position, I'd probably be on the set before y'all pulled the fuck up, sitting in my own car. Like, y'all ready? Let's go. Let's do this because it's not promised to you.
Right.
And when you get there, you should be a little more humble and remember why you worked so hard to get there. And be prepared. Be ready to go. Like, is that so hard?
Right.
I don't play around.
For some people, it is. And I don't understand it. But for some people,
sometimes it take their ass to hit rock bottom before until the movies dry up.
Right.
Until they find another star and they move on to the next person for people to understand.
It.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I don't. This is a lot of stuff that I don't understand about this business. Like, we have a lot of artists out there. You know, you reach out, you know somebody 20, 25 years, and you say, hey, man, could you do my podcast? And yeah, man, I'd love to. And then you call them a million times, they don't get back to you. And then you go see them do the white man's podcast.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
And then they see you. And it's still, what's up, dude?
You know how I am, Shantae.
Yeah,
I'm quick. Fuck
you
out my face.
Right. I was about to say.
I done told fuck out my face, dude.
Yeah.
You so full of shit. Go run over there and do that other shit. But when you were struggling and you needed somebody to give you a look, we're the same people that gave you a look.
Right.
But you won't give us a look. It's like, it's just insanity to me. I don't understand how you keep your brain wrapped around this shit, Shantae.
Yeah, but, I mean, everybody has.
And it's tougher for a woman.
Yeah, it is.
It's super tough for a woman. And you're a beautiful woman, Shantae. So it's got to be double tough for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's hook up. You know, you want to hook up. And
well, nothing compares to the music business back in the day. That was the worst.
Wow.
That was the worst.
Wow.
Anything went. They come at you any way they want it, you know. Today, it's a breeze compared to what we went through.
And then you right now you're hearing so many horror stories about people that you had no idea that was doing that kind of shit.
Yep.
Back in the days when I was on MTV and then I had the label, because I had a label. We had No Face Records through Rush Associated.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my partner Sean and Mark, we had Rush Associated. And then you hear all of this shit about Russell. You hear this stuff about AJ Calloway. Blew me the fuck away.
Yeah.
That's why I always try to keep it professional. When you're dealing in a professional capacity with a woman, deal with that woman in a professional capacity.
Right.
If she says to you, if you're single and she's single, and let her make the first move if she's interested in you. A lot of these guys use their power to try to get a woman in the bed. And I don't think that's the way you ever want to be with a woman in the first place. You know what I mean? You always want to be, women are there to do their job, and 9 times out of 10, they're smarter than you. So,
right.
Shit.
Yeah, but it was wild back then.
I'm
never surprised when I hear the stories, because I'm like, I know how many
people said crazy
stuff.
How'd you fend that shit off?
I would just kind of ignore them. You know, I was like, I'm not here for that. I'm not dealing with that. Like,
right.
Once you kind of shut them down a little bit, they're just like, oh, okay, she's not a, you know.
Yeah, she ain't one of them.
She's not easy. You know? So, but yeah, they'll try you.
But of course, you have seen and have heard of your peers compromising themselves.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make it harder for you as a woman to succeed? When they allow themselves to be used like that?
I never looked at it like that. I looked at it like that, you know, that's their price, you know, that they're going to have to deal with. I personally never looked at it like it affected me, but I have had men come on to me and, you know, I'll be like asking for a track or I want to get with the producer to get with my group. And they'd be like, okay, well, I'm trying to fuck you. I'm like, what?
Straight like that?
Straight like that. Back then? Yeah. All the time. I'm like, and some men that I hear talking all this crap on the internet. I'm like, you were one of them too. Like,
really?
Yes. Yes.
Dudes that are now standing up,
yes,
trying to defend
talking
the women,
shit,
talking
right,
that Me Too,
like,
shit, that we need to,
yeah,
do better.
Right. I'm like, you were down. You came at me sideways. Like,
wow.
Yeah, you were wilding back then.
Wow.
So,
I am,
yeah,
so glad, yes, that there's going to be nobody that can say Ed Lover ever said anything inappropriate or did anything,
yeah,
to them or with or next to them, or there was like, no skeletons in my closet like that.
Sit down somewhere. Because like, I know if I feel this way, there's other women that,
yeah,
feel this way too.
Because, yeah,
you know, a few of them were wild back then.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's crazy. You know, you're a true inspiration to every young black female walking this planet Earth, and you're living proof that if you stick to your guns and you work hard,
yeah,
and you learn, even when you bullshitted your way in and stuff, that, which I find hilarious,
yeah,
right, that you can actually do it.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
Yeah, what's next, yeah, for you? Films?
Films, yes. I actually talked to 50 yesterday. He's going to executive produce the next show I'm doing with a friend of his. So,
want to give us a little sneak on what the show is going to be about, Shante?
It's juicy. It's a reality show, which is going to be different. But these, I don't know. I mean, he's done non-scripted, but I don't know if he's ever done reality. But it's a juicy reality show.
Okay.
Reality show pays the bills, but because movies take so long to get them greenlit and whatever.
Yeah.
But I definitely have that on the horizon. Documentaries.
Okay. Are you trying to do it on the network you're on, or are you trying to go major network with the,
this one's going to be major. It's
okay.
Be major network, yeah.
Yeah. I know how you get down.
But I love the network I'm on right now with this show because I love the fact that we can be on any device. That,
right,
you know, that anytime you want to see it, you pull it up, and you know, I love that with the Urban Movie Channels and the Netflix,
yeah,
and
shout
the,
out
know,
to
so
them.
The digital, and
shout
we're
out
not
to
held
Urban Channel,
to
Bob Johnson,
the censorship, and,
right?
Yeah,
you ain't got to pull no punches,
right?
You do what you want to do. Thank you, Shante Page.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
You are an amazing, amazing, amazing woman, and We really pray for you all the time, and we appreciate
you. Thank
you. Let's come on Son the Podcast. I'm Ed Lover. Peace out, y'all.
Peace out.
Come on, son. This Ed Lover Podcast is being done in conjunction with Cigars International. Make sure you check out CigarsInternational.com for all your cigar needs.
This episode of Come On, Son, the Podcast is produced and engineered by co-executive producers Krista Hayes and Kimana Paulus in downtown Chicago. This is an official Loudspeakers Network podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof?
Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.